Today is June 23rd, 2010, and you are listening to Episode 9 of FatCast. I am Leslie Kinzel of FatChinista.com, and as always, joining me is Marianne Kirby of TheRotund.com. This podcast is part 2 of our conversation about fat travel. Hello, and you are listening to FatCast, episode 9. This is part 2 of our conversation about fat travel. You have to get a woo in there every time.
I'm sorry, I'm excited.
This is actually sort of apt for me today because tomorrow I am flying to Los Angeles on an unfamiliar airline, and I'm officially reaching the, I live in Boston, so it's about a 6-hour flight, and I'm officially like sort of quickly getting, ramping up to that whole travel panic thing. Like, oh my god, I'm getting on a plane and I'm not really familiar with this airline, and I'm gonna be on this plane for 6 hours and be sitting next to my husband who gets really antsy on airplanes, and what am I gonna do? And I don't know, I mean, I assume that I'm not the only person in the world with pre-travel anxiety. I know you have often talked about this, Marianne.
Yes,
you've blogged about it even.
Yes.
But you know, it's sort of, I feel like one of the things that gets me going, aside from the fact that I hate flying and I have basic flying anxiety, not so much because I'm afraid I'm going to crash and die, but because, as I think I mentioned last week, I get really, really horribly motion sick. So I have to drug myself extensively before I get on a plane. But I think, I feel like part of what makes fatties, and this also goes back to that horrible Lapland commercial about, you know, I can finally go to Paris. I feel like part of what makes us nervous travelers is that unfamiliar vibe, that whole, you know, if you're flying, in my case, I'm flying on Virgin America, which I have heard by all accounts is a great airline and that I should be fine and comfortable. And I've actually surveyed fats about this and they've all said, yes, it's fine. You'll be fine. It's slightly less comfortable than JetBlue, but overall, it's a pretty great airline. So I feel like part of the anxiety that we run into, though, and I know that we've seen this conversation happen on the LiveJournal community, too, is people who are talking about going someplace that is incredibly unfamiliar to them, like people who talk about, I'm going to Amsterdam or I'm going to the UK. Am I going to get harassed by people for being a fat person? And That sort of breaks my heart a little bit, because we've actually also seen stories from people who are like, oh my God, I was on vacation in France and a group of school children like chased me and threw donuts at me or something awful like that. And I feel like, you know, this is part of what makes us sort of extra anxious, that you don't know if you're going to be a target. And maybe I'm just pulling this out of my ass. What do you think, Marianne?
I think that there's a lot of travel anxiety, and a lot of it is manufactured by travel, like not travel agencies, because there are actual travel agencies that arrange your travel for you, but by the various, I don't know, various and sundry accessories to travel, whether it's airlines or, I don't know, those goddamn vacuum bag people who are like, oh my God, your suitcase is gonna explode. Like, we seem to sell a lot of quote-unquote solutions based on a manufactured anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, all of that sort of heaps on top of the unfamiliarity for a lot of people of going to a strange place via a method that may or may not seem magical depending on your, you know, your views. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a naturally discombobulating, stressful thing. And I mean, I say this as someone who loves to travel. So,
yeah,
I mean, of course it's stressful.
I mean, to be clear, I actually really love traveling too. My anxiety mostly seems to come from the flying aspect, which is both, for me, it's sort of multi-pronged. For one, it's a motion sickness thing. For two, it's the whole what if they say I'm too fat for the seat thing.
Yeah.
And for three, when I'm traveling with my husband, it's oh shit, I have to sit next to my husband who is going to be so grouchy the whole flight
Yeah.
because he's not a big fan of traveling. He likes, sort of once he's at a place and he's been there for like 24 hours, he's a good time. But like he just responds so badly to the whole leaving the house and getting on a plane and going to a strange location thing. Like he just doesn't handle it well. And, so that also inadvertently contributes to my anxiety because I'm like, oh God, is am I gonna want to get divorced by the time we land, Because that's a danger.
It sounds to me like he is the one who needs to be participating in the drugging.
But that's just the thing is he doesn't get anxious. He just gets sort
Gets
of,
pissed
he
off.
gets cranky. Yeah. And all the anxiety sort of falls to me. Like I have to carry that. I worry. I'm the one who, makes sure we have like boarding passes and stuff like that.
I
So.
like your husband a lot. I think he's a fantastically fun person. But when you're like, he gets cranky, I'm like, Leslie, he's cranky a lot. Like,
He
doesn't
is.
he kind of start with a certain baseline cranky?
He absolutely does. And like, just to clarify for people, yes, my
It's
husband is
part of his charm.
he is completely a cranky bastard, like 80% of the time, probably. The only times that he's not cranky is like if he like has a new video game or otherwise, is sort of like thrilled by life for some, nerdy reason. So yeah, there is a baseline of cranky pants, and that's part of where my, I because I can anticipate the crank, it contributes to the overall anxiety, I guess, is what I'm saying here. Yeah. So, but yeah, so I'm sort of, in this pre-travel anxiety zone, and I'm doing that thing where I'm obsessing over, I need to make lists of everything that I need to do, and I need to make lists of everything that I need to pack.
I made
And
a list before my last trip. I was like, Leslie does this list thing. She seems to forget fewer items than do I. I'm gonna make a list. And then I forgot my list at work.
if you forget the list, that's a bad sign
Well,
coming right out of the gate.
I fixed the situation. I had taken a picture of my list to text to Ed, my husband, because of the whole novelty of me taking a list. So I emailed, like, from my phone, I took a picture and I emailed it to Flickr and to Ed. And I was able, upon realizing that I had forgotten my list, to go to Flickr and size it up and then just check everything off the list from there.
That's pretty awesome. That's kind of like, social media narcissism pays off in a big way.
It was amazing. I was like, I love living in the future. But I had this moment where I realized I'd forgotten my list, where instead of just throwing a bunch of shit in a suitcase, which is my usual tactic, I sat there and was like, well, what am I going to do now? I don't have my list. Like, making a list had created an artificial dependency on the list. And so I blame you.
Thank you. Well, I
You're
mean, when you start doing what I do on certain trips, if I'm going to visit family, I'm less obsessive because I know that I'll have transportation and I know where I can get whatever I need because I know the area. But my real sort of obsessive problem is when I will in advance, and I don't do this every trip. I only really do it trips where I'm going somewhere unfamiliar and I'm limited in packing space.
Yeah.
I will go through, this is so embarrassing. I will go through and I will put together outfits and in advance and I will actually write them down with visual aids and I will pack my little outfit drawings lists so that I can remember what I planned on wearing with what, because a problem that I sometimes have when I go on vacation is because so much of my clothing is interchangeable. I will go on vacation and I'll just sort of randomly like wear things together as however it strikes me in the morning. And then I get to like the third to last day and I'm like, oh, nothing I have left in my bag goes together.
Leslie, I love you.
So I will put together lists of outfits, and often I will even assign them to days.
I did that on my list this time. I was like, okay, there's a party this night and I want to wear that, but I need a costume change during the day, so I will wear that. But once I got there, like, I didn't feel constrained by that because I made sure to pack clothes that all go together.
Yeah.
Which I think is really useful, and yeah, also a lot easier when you're packing predominantly black clothing.
Well, one interesting thing too is that I know that you pretty much never, ever, ever check a bag, ever.
Oh my God, ever.
Okay. I usually do check a bag. I don't know why. If I'm packing something, I will admit that I do share some of your reasoning for not checking, because if I'm packing something that I particularly love and I know I would not be able to replace it if it got lost, I will put that in my carry-on. So if I have like something, you know, like a really nice Donna Rico dress that I love that I know is discontinued and I will never get again, I will stick that in my carry-on just to be on the safe side, like thinking like, well, if I lose the rest, if I lose like 5 dresses from Ishakti, I can just go order them again. But, you know, if I lose this other dress, I know I can never replace it. So I'll keep that with me. But I usually do check a bag, and just because I like having the space, and I'm kind of obsessive about packing multiple pairs of shoes. And because unlike you, I have like normal sized feet. So,
oh my God, I cannot believe you are calling me out on my little
you
feet.
You have little tiny feet. I have gigantic feet. So packing multiple pairs of shoes in a carry-on means I lose a lot of space to that. So typically,
such a face at you right now.
Typically, I do check a bag, but this last trip to New York, obviously I did not because it was such a short trip, and I'm not checking a bag going to Los Angeles because it's only for like 3.5 days. And I gotta give you credit that it actually is kind of awesome to travel without having to go to the baggage claim.
Stand there and wait for it. Yeah. I always want to ride the little thing, and they won't let you ride the little thing. So you have to stand there and behave.
And it's true. I mean, it's sort of, it's really, like, I was watching a video on, now I'm going to have to go find it. I think it was a video on the NewYorkTimes.com website or something, I don't know, that was a flight attendant getting 10 days worth of clothes into, like, a tiny little carry-on.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. I swear I watched it like 12 times because I'm like, wow. And I'm thinking on the one hand, like, it's all well and good for you, skinny lady, to get 10 days worth of clothes into a carry-on. But I could probably get like 6 days if I really, really tried. Even though my clothes are like each article of clothing is probably twice as big as hers.
Leslie, I fit 5 days of clothing with costume changes. shut up! I had to change outfits! I had an extra pair of shoes. Granted, they were sandals. And then another extra pair of shoes. I traveled with 3 pairs of shoes this time. That's unheard of. So I had 5+ days of clothes, 3 pairs of shoes, and every item of makeup that I own, plus the most enormous collection of makeup samples ever for this makeup party that we did. I fit all of that into a carry-on, plus my flat iron, plus like headphones and chargers for unbelievable numbers of electronics.
I thought Ed packed all that.
What are you trying to say, Leslie?
I thought Ed, well, you're saying I fit all this, well, la, 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 la.
I made the list. No, Ed has like this Tetris-like packing ability. It is pretty insanely amazing, but I am learning from his tricks because I fit it all back in there. Oh, except for the makeup samples, because we gave all those to some teenage girls. They were very excited.
No, you're
like,
right.
What's left over from the party.
You're right. You deserve some credit because you did manage to get it all home again.
Thank you. Without expanding my suitcase.
One of the things I love that it just for background for everyone, after Marianne like first got back from WisCon, like the next morning, I get this email from her that is a link to one of which you actually blogged about these pictures in
I
general,
did.
but you didn't put up this particular picture that said I'm a little teapot, and it's a picture of Marianne in the bodycon turquoise dress, which looks fantastic on you, and you're standing in this like adorable little pose, and I swear I've actually kept that on my like as one of the tabs on Firefox for days because every time I look at it I'm like, little But that was an example of a costume change, I believe.
Yes, it was. Okay, so at WisCon, there was a photo booth. There was a professional photographer who was like, I feel like taking pictures of fancy, geeky, feminist people. So Sunday night, every night at WisCon, there are multitudes of parties, and everybody goes to the sixth floor of the hotel, and they wander from party to party. And the photo booth was, I believe, Sunday night, and a lot of people dressed up for it. There isn't like a formal dress-up event anymore at WisCon, but some friends of mine were like, I'm going to buy a dress with a giant sleeve. It's an awesome dress. And, other friends were like, I'm going to wear this. And people were getting very fancy. So I found this dress at Torrid. Actually, Julia was visiting, and we went shopping at Torrid, and she pulls it off the clearance rack, and she's like, I bought this dress and it's such a hot mess and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it sounds like it's an amusing hot mess. I will try it on so that we can then laugh at it. Because sometimes that's fun. I mean, you don't have to only try on things you think are going to look good. Sometimes you can try things on for comedic value. So that's what I did. And I loved this dress. And Julia loved the dress and was also, I think, a little bitter. And so I bought the dress and I needed somewhere to wear it. And that's what
Wait.
was
Did
for.
the dress require side fat?
It did, I think. I think it was incredibly side fat dependent. And
Just
Julia didn't have any.
for some background for people, Julia is a mutual friend of ours who is tragically side fat deficient, and it means that a lot of clothes don't fit her as fabulously as they fit those of us with bounteous amounts of side fat. So this is sort of an ongoing joke, I guess, is Julia's lack of side fat, and she's gonna love that we're talking about this on the podcast.
I know, because she listens, and I'm afraid that when this goes live, I'm going to get a text message like, really, Marianne? Really? Because that's the disapproving Julia voice.
Yes.
And it's in my head now, and when I do something stupid, I hear Julia in my head.
It's really my fault I brought it up, so you can just be like, it's Leslie, I couldn't stop her.
I couldn't, I was helpless. And so we did this little, everybody stood in line and you filled out little cards and he took pictures and you could do group shots. And one of the shots I got was just kind of like, I'm not sure what I'm doing right now, but it looked like I was about to play I'm a Little Teapot, Short and Stout, which I find a deeply amusing song anyway. And sometimes I sing it to myself because it's funny. And I don't know. There's just something about that photo that screams, I'm a little teapot to me. And I'm not saying I don't like the photo. I just think it's funny. And it's really interesting to sort of look at it and think it's an incredibly funny picture without hating my body in it.
It sort of reminds me of like the hippo from Fantasia.
I love that hippo.
I love that hippo too. Oh my God. But I saw it and I'm like, if she had like the little tutu on.
You know what it is? It's the hands. It's that I have
It's the
kind of small
hands are,
hands,
yeah.
and they're kind of very bristly positioned, I guess.
Yeah, we'll link to that so that people can look at it and be like, why is this so funny? I don't understand.
Leslie, we're supposed to be talking about travel,
We
not
aren't, but we are. These are all things that go along with travel. In fact, what I was going to segue into, if you hadn't ruined it, is talking about vacation photos. which I think...
I think that's a fantastic topic.
Because I think that this is something that a lot of people struggle with. That, and I can't tell, I mean, how many, we've all seen like a million diet commercials that talk about, oh, I went on vacation and got the pictures. Hang on. Excuse me. Wow, that was, couldn't breathe. I'll edit all that. Okay, so we see these commercials all the time where people, you know, get back from vacation and they see the pictures and they're like, oh my God, I'm such a fat whale. I need to call Jenny.
Which, I don't know. I feel like there's something disingenuous going on there. But I do realize that sometimes it's a shock to look at your body in the mirror versus the two-dimensional representation of your body. I get that. But I feel like one of the things that, in a sort of cyclical way, one of the things that helped me with body acceptance was taking more photos of myself. And one of the things that helped me with taking more photos of myself was fat acceptance.
Yeah.
Because I had a more, like, accurate, in touch, I'm making little finger quotes, you know, relationship with my body.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree.
One of the things I like is that when you and your husband go on vacation, there's always vacation photos. Like, I'm not in the habit of taking vacation photos, so I usually have very, very few.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks, because I've gone to some really freaking amazing places. I've been to the Taj Mahal, and I don't have any pictures of that.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell? What is wrong with me? and what's wrong with me in this case is sort of a lifetime of avoiding the camera and any interaction with it whatsoever. So now it's just not a thing that I do. And I am trying to consciously build up the number of photos that I'm willing to participate in and that I myself take. So one of the reasons I'm so like stuck on the photos other people took at WisCon is that I'm in them, and that like blows my mind.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting to me too is that I think a lot of us who generally don't, you know, I mean, I know people who are like compulsive about taking pictures all the time and just do it constantly. And I feel like with the advent of camera phones, that does happen more often now than it used to. But I feel like for a lot of us who sort of consciously or unconsciously avoid cameras and just don't really, you know, aren't exposed to pictures of ourselves very often, a lot of times the only time we are is after vacation, because a lot of people, you know, normally, even people who don't take a huge number of pictures out, you know, in their daily lives will take pictures on vacation. And I feel like that can be, if you haven't seen a candid photograph of yourself for a long time, you might be kind of like, whoa, is that what I look like? And it's sort of one of those like, yeah, well, yes and no. A photograph isn't really capturing what you actually look like as a living, breathing human in the world. But it is sort of what you look like insofar as, you know, it sort of gives you a rough idea. And trying to, you know, sort of being shocked by that. And I think sometimes when we're shocked by it, it's as much because, you know, we have so many cultural assumptions and negative stereotypes associated with fatness that whenever we see it, even if it's us, we automatically sort of place these negative ideas onto that person, even if it's us. And we know that, you know, it's not the case for us. So if I see a picture of myself at Disney World looking like a fat whale, which is true of all of my pictures, but
every time you say whale, I picture the fail whale from Twitter, and I think it's so cute. I love the little Twitter overcapacity whale. So that's what I'm like. I'm picturing that whale in one of your cardigans right now.
But it has to be a little bit fatter.
Yeah.
but yeah, so I feel like sometimes what happens is we'll see that picture and we'll be like, wow, that person looks so uncomfortable, or that person looks so, you know, ugly, or whatever it is we're putting on that picture. That's not how I feel. Well, it's not that, you know, I mean, you're seeing these things in yourself in this photograph because you're automatically displacing these negative attributes onto the person in the picture. because it's something you have to do. I mean, that's something, that's one of the things as activists that we're trying to fight against and change and be critical of.
I think sometimes, too, if you are already predisposed to dislike your body, the camera does pick up on things. Like, if you are uncomfortable in a social situation and deeply uncomfortable because there's a camera, the camera will see that. Like an animal, it senses fear. And that will be reflected. And I am suddenly thinking about a lot of the women that I know who don't own full-length mirrors.
Yeah.
And who don't look at their body from anything other than like the top view down as you're pulling on your pants, or even that,
mm-hmm.
you know? So actually, maybe I can understand how people who look at photos experience this sort of, oh my God, that's what I look like, because they don't look at themselves in any other context either.
Right.
Like, you know, brushing your teeth in the mirror gives you like the neck up,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're truly that disconnected from the act of looking at your body, and you've got that sort of discomfort thing already going on that the camera is capturing, I can see how it would be, you know, sort of deeply shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like it's so freaking sad when people, you know, go on vacation and they have an awesome time. And then they get the pictures, and I know this happens because I've heard from people that have done it. They get the pictures back, and they're so horrified, it like destroys the whole memory of the vacation for them. That, you know, it's not enough to simply be like, well, you know, I remember being out and having a great time and not thinking that I was a horrible beast. It's having seen the pictures can actually ruin that experience and the memory of that experience, because you have someone who is now thinking, oh my God, how embarrassing that I was out, you know, on a beach in the Bahamas looking like that, you know? And I think that is incredibly, I think it's very real. And I think it's something that a lot of people go through, but I also find it incredibly depressing.
Oh yeah. I was just sitting here like, wow, this is really, I don't know. It's one of those things that is not, the diet industry would have you believe that the solution then is to, you know, make yourself miserable,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, harm yourself in the pursuit of an entirely different body.
A bikini body.
Words. When really the solution is to, you know, accept your body and move on.
Seriously, there are no words strong enough for me to express how much I hate the expression bikini body.
I feel like there's a lot of loathing in your tone that makes it clear.
Yeah, like I'm making a stabbing motion with my hand right now. Like if I could stab that expression and kill it forever, I would do it. Because it makes me so fucking angry. Because it's such an obvious and candid commodification of women's bodies that if you do not look a certain way, you are not allowed to be seen in a bathing suit. And
one of the awesome things we did at WISCON was sort of body acceptance swimming.
Oh,
and
nice.
There were people of all sizes and shapes,
mm-hmm.
mostly in the hot tub. Some people actually did venture into the pool, but I was like, hot tub. And speaking of Julia had this incredible like James Bond bikini. And so like you're talking about bikini bodies and I'm like thinking of Julia's James Bond bikini, which was awesome and which is actually super practical for a lot of fat women who are two very different sizes on the top and the bottom, because you can buy the top in a different size.
Exactly. So
like,
yes.
Now, I mean, I hate that term, but now I'm like, maybe we should just co-opt it, because everybody that is wearing a bikini
is bikini body.
A bikini body. I have a tankini body because that's what I was wearing at the time. There were some polka dots, some hot pink. It was great.
Nice. Actually, I think I've seen that one.
I think So, I think I may have sent you like a dressing room photo.
Yeah.
Like, what do we feel about this combination of
Right.
ingredients?
I do vaguely remember that.
And it was hypothetical because they only had a size too small in the shorts, and I had to like get them brought in from another store.
You're so high maintenance, Marianne.
Yes, I know. God, what's up with me? They were hot pink, and they've got this ruching on the sides and bows. It's amazing.
What else do you need in a bathing suit? I mean, seriously. Seriously.
Very little, if you're me.
I
So.
also sort of wanted to talk about, super positive travel experiences because, I don't want to dwell on like the ugly shit.
Can we talk about one more thing before we talk about this?
Yes,
Okay.
absolutely.
Well, you mentioned it earlier, like the fear that you're going to go somewhere and have school ch children throw donuts at you. And
While yelling in French.
while yelling in French, I've never been to Europe, but I have been to the Indian subcontinent and Southeast Asia. And I lived in Thailand for a couple of years as a fat person and went back every summer as an increasingly fat person. And I went to India, been to the Philippines, Japan. No one ever chased me down the street and threw donuts at me. I did have commentary on my body because I had clothes made to fit my body. And so there was like body commentary, but it was not like mocking body commentary. It was just like, oh, you have a large body. We're going to do this then. And that was at that time, when I was still sort of ingrained in all of the societal messages that we get, even that was kind of easy to read as horrible. But I had to work at it to read it as horrible. And in retrospect, I'm like, that actually had nothing to do with any inherent judgment in the system or whatever. And I got a lot more attention, especially in India. I got a lot more attention because I was like a very whitey white chick, in a not touristy area. And I think we sort of default to everything is because I am fat. Well, especially if you're traveling in areas that are less tourism-y in general, it could be a whole host of things that, that are causing you to attract attention. So that's kind of my thing, is that sometimes, yes, you will attract attention, and it has nothing to do with you being fat, or if it's because you're fat, it is not necessarily attendant with all of the same judgments that you would get in your place of origin. And it's hard to keep that in mind when you travel sometimes.
We had a comment to the first Fat Travel podcast from a woman who is a fat travel writer, which I gotta be honest with you. I mean, she doesn't write about fat travel. She's just a travel writer who is fat. Just to make that clear.
Jealous.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting to is, oh my God, I want your job. But she commented talking about basically the same thing that, traveling on various different types of transportation in Asia and needing, to buy more than one seat. And she, made a comment about how people will be like, oh, because you're so fat. And it's not judgmental. It's just like, oh, I understand. Because you're a fat person, you need more space. Not, oh,
Now it makes sense to
right.
me.
And that I think is sort of something to remember that, yeah, of course, body culture varies dramatically wherever you are, but particularly when you're traveling to a culture that is otherwise completely unknown and different to you, it's entirely possible that you're not going to, it's just as possible that you're not going to get harassed as it is that you are going to get harassed. Because the reality is if you're fat, particularly if you're death fat, the odds of someone harassing you and giving you shit for being fat when you just leave your house and walk around in your neighborhood are about the same as it happening anywhere else in the world, I would argue. They're
Stop
probably
placing your American cultural expectations on other places.
I mean, I think it's possible there are some places where maybe it's slightly more off, you know, slightly more likely to happen or slightly less likely to happen. But I think for the most part, it's not, you know, there is no country that is like it's in their constitution. Like, also, we are really vicious and mean to fat people. It just, that's not, you know, how things operate. Yes, every country is going to have people in it who think fat people are gross, but that doesn't mean they're going to attack you about it either. So
I wish I could remember who told me the story now, but I was talking to somebody about fat travel, and they were talking about a family member's experience in Italy where her baggage had been lost. And she had had an incredibly hard time finding, and not as like a death fat, as like an in-betweeny, finding things like underpants and that sort of thing, and had dealt with a lot of very negative shopkeepers. And so I think this stuff does happen, and that is, you know, I don't want to invalidate anybody's fears on this issue.
Oh, yeah,
but
no.
I think that... I think that there are things you can do to prevent that. Like, that's one reason I take everything of importance in my carry-on. And, I mean, obviously, international travel, I check a bag. And I still have things in my carry-on to get me through if something should happen to that bag. And then you don't find yourself in that incredibly vulnerable position of, I don't have any underwear. What am I going to do? I actually did have a bag lost and kind of destroyed when I was coming back to the U.S. From India. And that was the start of everything goes in my carry-on. Because it was, I hate to say it was catastrophic, but it was a little bit catastrophic because I had only the bra I was wearing, you know, And so you don't want to go into travel ill-prepared, I guess. But once you are prepared, you don't have to continue to, I don't know, worry over it like it's automatically going to be horrible.
Yeah, I guess my sort of overarching point there was that if I go into any store anywhere that doesn't carry my size, I'm probably going to get attitude from... I mean, I'd be surprised if I didn't get attitude from the person who runs the store. Now, maybe I'm just sort of being pessimistic about that, but that's, you know, that's something that, and when you're traveling, it's even more, what's the word I'm looking for? It's even more unnerving because, like you said, if you have nothing and you're sort of like, well, I don't know what else to do. I have to go into every store and just hope and pray they have something in there that will, you know, service me. That
and then
is,
you're using your vacation money on that
right.
And your time and...
Which is miserable. So yeah. This is why also, as you know, I talked about putting stuff that I really care about in my carry-on. I also, in my carry-on, I always put at least one change of clothes and underwear and a bra just to be on the safe side, figuring that, well, if I have, you know, if worse comes to worse, you know, and I have a couple of bras and, you know, at least I will have something to change into the next day when I have to go out and buy something else to wear. And I mean, I actually sort of knew as an acquaintance, a guy who did a lot of travel photography, and he went to Europe for like a 3-week trip to just, you know, tool around Europe and take pictures for, you know, he did all this freelance. So he went. And they lost his bag on the way there.
Oof.
And they never found it. They found it like 3 days before he was supposed to come back. So he traveled all and he didn't cancel because, you know, what the hell? I mean, he he's there as much for work as for anything else. So he just wore the same 2 outfits over and over and over again for like 2.5 weeks. Before they finally got his bag back. And because then by that point, he wasn't even in the same country where he had landed. So they also had to get it to where he was. So, yeah. So, I mean, this is something that, You know, good idea to always pack a change of clothes in your carry-on just to be on the safe side.
And honestly, I do that no matter what form of travel. I take a lot of road trips. You know, so you pack your stuff, but obviously you've got more easily accessible things. I don't know. I think it's always good to have like a handy, just in case your husband stomps on the brakes and your water bottle explodes all over you in your face, kind of change of clothes.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yes, that happened on our honeymoon. Yeah, we'd been married like 24 hours. It was amazing.
Oh my gosh.
We laughed and laughed and laughed. I have also had the somewhat dubious pleasure of taking an 18-hour Greyhound bus trip. And, you know, your luggage goes under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Keep something handy.
Yeah.
That's a long-ass trip.
Yeah.
And it feels good to, you know, change your socks.
Mm-hmm.
Like 12 hours into that. It's very refreshing. You know, and that's sort of my thing. Like, I will wear the same pair of jeans if necessary. But having a clean pair of underwear and a clean pair of socks
mm-hmm.
makes, like, the biggest difference ever.
Yeah.
So I totally recommend that. I have never been on a cruise, so I cannot speak to fatty cruising.
Mm-hmm.
But I can speak to fatty Greyhound bussin.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, interestingly, something that's worth throwing out just to get people's input on is you and I have talked about the possibility of doing like a fat cruise thing along the lines of like, what's the goth cruise called? Is it just called goth cruise? I always forget.
It's called goth cruise.
Okay, it is called goth cruise. Or like, well, you know more about this than I do. What are the other cruises? Give the people an example of what we're talking about.
I was taking a bite of my bagel. Sorry.
Stop stuffing your face and record the podcast.
Oh my God. I woke up and I was like, okay, I have to record in half an hour. And Ed brought me a bagel. It's a blueberry bagel instead of a sesame bagel, but I'm suffering through it. And yeah. So there's this woman called the Crafty Chica. I'm sure some people who are into crafty things may have heard of her. She's very into glitter. She does a cruise. And there are lots and lots and lots of different themed cruises where mm-hmm. basically a bunch of people, where a bunch is any given number from 50 to, I don't know,
hundreds.
However many,
yeah.
The sky's the limit. However many will fit on the cruise ship. And they organize some activities. The Crafty Chica, they have like a craft room set up for the duration of the cruise, and they have different craft related activities programmed every day. Goth cruise, they have various drinking related.
I was about to say they have lots of alcohol
activities every day. Well, goth cruise is a little different because it's really just about a bunch of people who have known each other via alt-gothic
yeah.
and alt-gothic fashion to hang out. And
it's a social thing.
Yes, it's a social yeah. thing. Don't you diss goth cruise? Oh,
I'm not. I find it hilariously brilliant.
I love looking at pictures from it every year. I'm like, these people are my friends that I like.
But yeah, I think that having like basically, you know, you get a block of rooms on a cruise ship and all of your compatriots come and you know, have some activities and you hang out with your like-minded individuals. And
I think this would be a particularly cool thing though, because one of the things people tend to do on the cruise ship is to sit there in a bathing suit, whether in the pool in the middle of the ocean, which is one of my favorite, like, visuals of irony. like, think about it from the like, the god angle. Looking down. Teeny little swimming pool on a little ship in the middle of the ocean. I love that. Yeah. So,
well, I think it's almost like a penultimate version of the fat flash mob thing I brought up before. That the
yeah.
idea of all of these fat people in bathing suits sort of storming a cruise ship swimming pool. I think that's kind of awesome.
Well, that was one of the totally awesome things about body acceptance swimming, was that there were some, smaller people there, but there were a lot of death fats in the swimming pool. And it was so great. And all kinds of swimwear, swim trunks and tank tops and James Bond bikinis and all sorts of things. And people who came in after we were all already in the pool were so confused, because we were also having a lot of serious conversations about gender, politics, and all of this stuff. And yeah. So I love the idea of a mass of fat people, and I think that's going to be my plural collective noun, is a mass.
A mess.
And sort of taking over the pool area and maybe playing some shuffleboard.
And I bring it up mostly because I'm curious to see if our listeners, such as they are, would be interested in such an arrangement. I hear this and think, oh, hell yes, I would love to do this, even though the aforementioned motion sickness. I would bring Dramamine so that I could attend, such a cruise, and I think it would be great fun. And I'm just sort of curious if, what other people's feelings are about that. Like if people feel like, oh, hell yes, I would love to do that. Or if people feel like, oh, hell no, I would not love to do that.
I would like to register my vote for hell yes.
Okay, good. So we have two hell yeses
Yeah.
so far. And listeners can register their votes in comments or emails if they so desire.
Did your parents ever plan like fa little family summer vacations with other families?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, my parents,
It's
the
worth.
yawning silence there, I was like, okay, apparently this is a foreign notion.
It's just my just for reference, I grew my parents got divorced when I was six, and I grew up, my dad had custody of me. And so our vacations tended to be his business conferences. So because they'd have an annual conference, he worked for Prudential Insurance for many, 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 many years, and they would have an annual conference, and we would go to the conference, which, was awesome, and I absolutely loved. But aside from that, the only non-conference family vacations that I really remember are Disney World, which we're going to talk about in a bit, and
Yes, we are.
we did like a ski trip once to Utah, and we did a trip to the Grand Canyon once. But aside from that, most of the others were all, sort of him being in meetings all day, and I would run rampant through the hotel with the kids of his coworkers, which was actually really fun.
I'm like, that sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it really was. It was awesome. I absolutely loved it. I have some great pictures. There was a Montreal one, and there one of the conference photographers took pictures. They had these elevators that had this big atrium. I don't remember the name of the hotel. Had this big atrium that had these escalators that went all the way up through the middle of it. It was almost like this free floating effect.
Wow.
And the escalators were like mad long, and there were a bunch of them going up multiple floors. And we kids were obsessed with these escalators. And we would just go up and down, and we would go up the down escalator. We go down the, we were horrible, like terrors. I'm sure everybody in the hotel was like, fuck these fucking Americans. I hate them. Get them out. But yeah, so we were obsessed with the escalators. And I have this great picture of me at like 10, fucking around on an escalator that was taken by a professional photographer. But yeah, so it's
That
pretty
is
funny.
rad.
Yeah, sorry, but you were talking about dual family vacations.
Well, like we didn't go far away places. My family got in the car and drove to Panama City. And a neighbor's family got in the car, and sometimes we drove in the same car, but usually we mixed up cars and drove to the same destination, and we all had a good time hanging out in Panama City. And I'm like, whether we do Fat Cruise or not, our little families may have to go on a cruise. I'm
That would
just
be
saying.
awesome. I'm totally down with that.
I just
Absolutely.
think that would be fun. I'm sure there's a
Absolutely.
video game room.
Yeah. Or we could just, pack up Dennis's Xbox, and he and Ed could I don't know, blow shit up while you and I go and do stuff. But yeah, so
we can treat it like research.
Exactly. Exactly. We could probably deduct it on our taxes.
I would like it. Do that.
It's research. It's research for a future business opportunity.
Well, we do have that thing we've been talking about.
We have to sit by the pool for at least 2 hours a day. It's part of the research.
Well, we have to test the chairs.
Yeah. See if they will support the death bat.
Exactly.
How long before they collapse?
I don't want to give, you know, uninformed reviews. I feel we should be thorough.
Oh, God.
So, Walt Disney World.
Walt Disney World.
Can we talk about Walt Disney World as a fat destination?
We can, and I'm going to try real hard to keep on topic because something people may or may not know about me, depending on how closely you have followed me on the internets for a long time, I am an embarrassingly obsessive fan of Walt Disney World, and I'm sure that there are some folks who are like, what?
It's true.
I am obsessive. I know more trivia. I could easily have a second job as a Disney World travel agent. Actually, a couple years ago, and I swear we'll get to the fat part in a minute. A couple years ago, I booked a vacation through a travel agent that was recommended by a friend. And all they do is Disney vacations, and they're specially certified in Disney vacations. And the lady was really nice, but I knew more about what I wanted to book than she did. And I would like reference certain things, and she'd be like, "You can't do that," and I'd be like, "Oh yes, you can." So yeah, I've got an obsessive Disney World thing, and Dennis and I go at least once a year. Sometimes more than once a year. So I'm pretty. I'm really not, because I was just talking about this with my hairdresser the other day that, it's one of those places that is a complete escape. You can't really, it's very hard to be worried about anything relating to your everyday life when you are in Disney World, because it just has this way of completely taking you out of yourself and anything else you might be stressing out about. And that includes traveling as a fat person.
It does. I want to interject before we thoroughly get into the Disney World topic, just because I'm thinking of it right now. I know we have listeners who are not in the U.S. and I have flown non-U.S. operated airlines, but I don't have a lot of, travel through Europe experience, having never been there. So if there are other travel tips for people who are not located in the U.S., I think it would be awesome if we could get some listeners to, quote-unquote, call in via email, Twitter, comments, whatever, to sort of share those so that we can post them for people who are not in the U.S. How do you travel across Australia as a fat person? I would like to know. I'm sure there are some commonalities, but if there's a non-U.S. version of the sort of Disney World experience that we describe that may or may not be Disney related, I would like to know about that.
Yeah. And I also want to, we've been talking a lot about vacationing, but I hope that a lot of what we're talking about also applies to people who travel for work or people who are traveling for less pleasant reasons.
Yeah.
I just want to sort of acknowledge it, that, you know, we're aware that this has been sort of a fluffy read for the most part on, some very real and very...
Not all travel is fun.
No, and a lot of it is anxiety-inducing for a lot of reasons that are less, much more distressing than, I don't want to have to put my bag under the seat in front of me, So I just want to acknowledge that, I hope that a lot of stuff we've talked about is applicable to that as well.
Yeah. Lessening your travel anxiety
Yeah.
hopefully will be helpful in those situations as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so what you said, and
Thanks. So what you said.
I'm seconding you. I'm supporting and validating what you have said.
Yes, I feel validated. I
Good.
appreciate that.
As
So
should
Disney
be.
World.
Yes, for
I live
sure.
in Orlando and I have worked as a third-party cast member. I worked at Downtown Disney. That was fun for 3 years.
Oh,
And I would
God.
like I went through like when you're they call them cast members.
They do.
Like you're not a Disney employee, you're a
No.
cast member. When you go to apply for a job at Disney World, you go to Central Casting. It
And
is,
visitors are not customers, they're guests.
yes. And part of your orientation when you're a Disney cast member is this sort of Disney indoctrination. And there's a lot of trivia and there's a lot of history of the company and there's a lot of running around spotting hidden Mickey Mouses and that sort of thing. You are far more educated, even having done all of these things. You are like far and above the Disney expert compared to most of the people I know who've worked at Disney.
Yeah, it's a little obsessive, I think.
I think it's awesome.
Well, one thing I did want to point out is, my experiences there have, and there are, I have heard some sort of unpleasant stories, but they've been very rare. Overwhelmingly, people, particularly cast members, tend to be, really, I mean, it's, and I'm pretty sure, particularly people who actually are working on site, in the theme parks, are trained heavily to be nice to everyone. I think they get mild electric shocks if they're mean to people, to be honest with you. Like a manager comes up with a cattle prod or something. But they really are. I mean, even when they, and I have seen guests like reaming cast members before, and they just smile and nod, and they're incredibly patient and incredibly kind. And I think that's a huge part of the training and what's expected of them. But it does extend to fat people that, it's, if you're trying to get on a ride and, for a ride like Test Track where, you might be a little uncomfortable being smushed up to next to somebody in the seat next to you, they will, not put someone next to you, or, there's definitely sort of a built-in awareness. There was, I heard one terrible story once about a woman who had a bad experience on Rock and Roller Coaster at Disney Studios that somebody, basically a cast member was trying, I think was based on the story that I heard, was trying to sort of make sure she got a row to herself, but in so doing, sort of made it a bigger, obvious deal than it had to be.
I was going to
And
say, because my experience is that they don't even really ask you about it. They sort of
they
default
just
to certain behaviors like, okay, you two are together, you'll go here, and then they don't put anybody else in your line.
Exactly. And that's been my experience, my own experience. And God, I didn't want to tell you how many times I've been. It's a lot of times. That's always been where it just, like you said, it defaults to it. It's not brought up. Nobody asks you, hey, do you need more space? They just assume that, and you know what? Frankly, I'm not going to be like, well, I don't need more space. Put someone next to me. I mean, it's not, it seems I'm happy with being sort of accommodated in that way if it's not in this sort of, in a way that is obvious and sort of making me a spectacle. And apparently, I don't know if it was a new person or whatever, but this woman had a terrible experience and she was very upset about it. And so I don't want to say it never, ever, ever happens, but it's never happened to me as a Death Fat. And I also, I feel like it's, as a place, Disney World works really hard to be accessible in terms of disability. And for better or worse, I know a lot of us have, sort of strong feelings about whether fatness gets lumped in with disability or not. But for, regardless of all of that, it does mean that it can be incredibly accessible for fat people too. Because, things like there are a lot of rides that have bench seats, Well, like you were talking about the 80s truck seat,
yes.
the last one.
Well, one of the, I don't remember if we talked about it in the last one, but we were talking about it at some point, and the bench seats accommodate child-sized bodies, adult-sized bodies, all of those bodies.
And that's
So.
why, yeah, a lot of people have argued that a lot of these rides were designed exclusively, yeah, because they were designed to fit people of all sizes, because they were thinking about people of all ages. They really do fit people of all sizes. So it's not just like, slender adult and kid. It's, all kinds of different bodies can fit.
I live, like I said, I live in Orlando. I worked there. You get a certain jaded, oh God, the mouse, in all caps, like there's some sort of mafia organization. And I mean, there's some kind of weird shit that goes down with the Disney. But when I stop and think about the experience, like the specific thing that they are trying to do, they are manufacturing a fantasy experience, and they are really damn good at it. Like all the shit that happens on the back end that may or may not, be evil mega conglomerate-y, like on the front end as a consumer of it, it works really well. I mean, I went on It's a Small World After All, and obviously some of the design, like all of the rides have at various points been retrofitted and updated and that sort of thing. But even on, rides original to the park, I didn't have any problems. Like I was more comfortable on those rides than I was on some of the newer rides that are designed more exclusively for children. Finding Nemo.
As well, that's the thing with the clamshell that closes in front of you.
It's so cute.
It really is,
It's not the living seas anymore, but I mean, what
which
are you gonna
bums
do?
me out, because I'm such a fan of old school Epcot, and amongst Disney fans there is this there's there oh my God, I mean, I Disney fans can be psychotic. I mean, seriously.
Horizons.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like fanboyism to the nth degree. And but I really do. I wouldn't necessarily, there are fans who are like, no, put it all back to, 1983. And I'm not really on that train, but I do, there are aspects of, sort of the older rides that I miss, because like you said, they were, Disney was, started out very much not being so much about the thrill rides and being more about things that families could all do together. And that included, little kids who wouldn't be, it wouldn't be safe for them to go on a roller coaster because the restraints just didn't fit. So, that, and I sort of, I like a lot of the newer rides, absolutely. I love Mission Space, although I'm like the only person I know who can go on it and not get sick. I've been on that like 4 times in a row and not getting sick, gotten sick,
I don't even know.
which is bewildering, because I get motion sick on every other form of transportation that I take, but somehow fake going into space is completely okay.
It's the twisting, and I probably should have listened to you and gone on it last instead of first. But
Warned you.
anyway,
I warned you.
and
One
a
thing I
dinosaur spit on me in the world of electricity, and
You mean universe of energy,
I
Marianne?
mean, I mean Ellen DeGeneres and Bill Nye. It was pretty fantastic.
One thing that I did want to take note of, just sort of to demonstrate the degree of fat friendliness of Disney World as a repeat destination, is one of the sort of non-affiliated, I don't even want to call it a fan site because I feel like that would diminish it. It's sort of like a travel tip site. That's put together by a woman named Deb Burgard, I think is her name. And the site is allearsnet.com, and it has a whole section on the site called WDW at Large. And it is a collection of personal anecdotes, pictures of ride seats. Like they have pictures of every seat on every, well, not every seat, but of a seat on every single ride on property. And people who haven't been, that's a lot of rides. And that is the most, now admittedly, I know all of this stuff already, like I can picture all of these seats in my head, but it's an enormous, you know, it, I look at this and think, wouldn't it be awesome if we had this for lots of destinations that, you know, to get a sense of what we're looking at and what to expect when we're there. But it's this fantastic collection, and it's all these people who tell their stories about, you know, I'm big and fat and I went and I had a great time. And, you know, if there's a ride that people, you know, have problems with, that will be sort of marked as, you know, some people have issues fitting on this ride. But overwhelmingly, I'm speaking as a death fat, you know, I wear a 26 or a 28 in US women's sizing. I fit in everything. There's really nothing, some stuff is more comfortable than other stuff, obviously, but there's nothing that I can't jam my body into and actually enjoy the ride.
The thing that I actually was surprised I had trouble with was not any of the rides. It was some of the older turnstiles.
They talk about that on the
Yes. And there's little
website, yeah.
gates next to them. So once I like went through one of them sideways and realized like, okay, this is a tight fit, you know, I started being like, can I go through the gate? And they open the gate and you go through and you're done.
Yeah, the gates are there for strollers, for people who use wheelchairs, for people who, for whatever reason, can't go through the actual turnstile. And they're total, like, nobody will give you shit if you want to walk through a gate instead of a turnstile.
And
Most
that
of the
was a huge relief because you do go other places where people are like, really? Can't you do, like, it's a big ass pain for them to open this little gate. Disney World? No.
No.
Not even a little bit.
No. They'll smile and wave you through. Yeah, absolutely. And I think most of the turnstiles have actually been replaced with like the little electric eye counters. I mean, the point of the turnstiles was to count how many guests were coming in and, you know, to at the end of the day to make sure as many came out as went in. But they've changed most of them so that they're not actually, because my problem with the turnstile wasn't even always so much having to go sideways as actually fitting between the prong things, where like one, you know, you get through and the one hits the front of your thighs and then the other one gets jammed up under your butt and it's like, oh my God, what if I can't move forward anymore? Like, what do
I think this should be
I do?
expanded upon in the sort of shit we've broken eventual
Yes, which
podcast.
I'm so happy people want to hear that podcast because I think it would be an awesome, hilarious little, you know, mini episode in which we, you know, sort of rattle off our experiences of breaking things.
Well, I like the concept of doing like a viewer, well, listener, I guess, listener mail
Yeah.
response
Absolutely.
thing
Absolutely.
stuff. What
Well,
you
I think, yeah, I think, well, we're at an hour. So I think, did we miss anything?
I think that travel is one of the awesomest things you can do as an adult, but especially as a child. And I think that if you are, you know, if you are able to, you know, whether it is taking a day trip to an interesting cultural site near where you live or, you know, going to the other side of the world, all of that has such amazing value. And I want to encourage people to seek out opportunities for that, whether it's local stuff or, you know, more far afield, just because it is such a perspective widening kind of thing. And you don't have to live in fear of that. There are ways to make it easier, and there are ways to make sure you're going to be comfortable. And the benefit, you know, if you're a person who enjoys those sorts of experiences, the benefit far outweighs the little bit of discomfort that you may experience because, you know, the turnstile is a little tight.
Right. Yeah, I think among other things, one of the one of our central points throughout everything we talk about and do is encouraging people to leave their comfort zones. And I feel like travel is a big opportunity to sort of go out and challenge yourself and do something that is new and maybe scary, because you're going to learn something about yourself, and you're going to learn something about, you're going to have a new experience. And like you said, whether it's something just, sort of going adventuring off locally, because no matter where you live, there's going to be something interesting around you that you haven't done before.
Yeah.
To just, step outside of what you consider comfortable and normal and safe, and give it a shot. Because, even if it goes wrong, it's not going to destroy you. And you will have learned from the experience. You'd learn, hey, I'm a lot stronger than I thought I was. That, I could be brave and ballsy and go out and do something that I've never done before, and go to a new place and face all of these differences and have a great time.
I love traveling.
Me too.
It's so exciting.
It really is.
It really is. There's always shit, no matter what size you are, that makes traveling uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because you're not at home with all of your stuff in your place that you know so well.
Exactly.
Regardless of what size you are. So I think that keeping that in mind, as with so many other things, is very, very useful. It is not just fat people who have problems with the travel.
Yeah. Well, like I said last time, everyone is uncomfortable on an airplane. That's just a fact of our lives. It's that airplanes are uncomfortable places. So as uncomfortable as you may be, the person next to you may not be hating you because you're fat. They may be just hating life because they're stuck on an airplane for 6 hours. So try not to take it personally.
It could be pissed off because you're American. You don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Or lots of other things.
All right. You have been listening to FatCast. This was episode 9, part 2 of Fat Travel. And I am Leslie Kinzel.
I'm Marianne Kirby.
Thanks for listening.
Yay.
You have been listening to FatCast episode 9. The music you've heard in this podcast is by NSA. FatCast is shared with you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license.